morning, everybody. We start with the topic subsidiaries that use
that are SMEs,
and what would be the perfect standard for them to use. And we have a guest performance today of Chris Peach, the AASB, the Australian Standard Setter. And they are in an exercise to develop a standard for firms in that position. So we are very curious to hear from you what your experience is. Please, Chris.
Excellent. And so I have Moina Rose with me, who's the AASB senior project manager as well, to help out, as she was the author of the exposure draft that we did. So the objective of today's session is really just to give you some background on our experiences in this particular area. So unfortunately that means I'm going to have to try and explain the Australian Financial Reporting Framework, which is a bit of a, I won't use the adjective I normally use. But if we could certainly take questions on the way, so I would like to make this as interactive as possible, because the whole idea is that you get the benefit of the things that we've experienced so far on our journey. So if we start off with what we're actually proposing in Australia. So at the moment we do have something, and so this is on slide 2, 3. We have something that we call a reduced disclosure requirements regime, and I'll explain that a little bit more in a minute. But basically what it does have at the moment is full recognition and measurement, but some reduced disclosures. And what we're proposing is very much along the lines of your project, which is having another look and saying, how can we replace that with something that's much more closely aligned to your IFRS for SMEs disclosures, but using the full recognition and measurement requirements. Now, just a couple of things to understand the scoping of our project. So ours is applying to more than just wholly owned subsidiaries and more than just subsidiaries of listed entities. Ours is applying to anyone who does not have public accountability as defined by your IFRS for SME standard. And having said that, we do actually deem some entities to have public accountability, just to make it clear. So, for example, we would say all banks, all insurance companies, the vast majority of our superannuation funds and managed investment schemes would also be deemed to have public accountability. So typically the entities that get captured for the RDR framework is your large proprietary companies, your small foreign control companies, and we have some unlisted public companies. So those are the ones that are typically getting swept up. That's on the for-profit side, but we also set standards for the public sector and for the not-for-profit sector as well, so that's your charities, your incorporated associations. So our standard is going to have a very, very broad scope compared to what potentially your standard would have. Okay, so if we move on to the next slide, any questions on that, just to...
Can I just confirm, sorry, Chris, so you, in Australia, the only formal recognition and measurement framework is essentially the IFRS framework. There is no other recognition and measurement framework anywhere available at all. So if you're not in the system, you do your own thing type of thing.
So the way it works is, so if we're talking about proprietary companies, so in Australia, it's only large proprietary companies and small foreign control companies that actually need to lodge financial statements with the regulator. If you're a small company, you basically don't have to do that. You basically can just do a tax return. You may choose to do something else, in which case you could choose whatever else you wanted to do. But at this point in time, from a standard setting framework, we don't provide another recognition and measurement framework. We are toying with the idea, and we most likely will do this in the not-for-profit sector, but the population of for-profit entities that we're actually dealing with is very small. So we're probably talking about less than 15,000 entities. So to have three, well, effectively four, because already you have three frameworks. You've got those that do general purpose, those that do RDR, and those that don't have to do anything. So effectively we've already got three frameworks, and introducing another level for that, particularly when you, even our small companies are actually really not that small. So they've just had an increase in thresholds, and so they're now 50 million in revenue and 25 million in assets and 150 employees. Yeah. So when you sort of look at it that way, it's they're not tiny entities that we're actually talking about.
Chris, along those lines, are you explaining on your slide 4, which is I think the one we're going to next?
Yep.
You're saying that if it's the private company, the I think what you call the proprietary company, or if it's a local subsidiary of a foreign entity, that's in the left-hand side, the reduced disclosure regime, potentially today?
Not quite.
Because I was going to say, and then the right-hand side, I was going to ask what framework the special purpose financial statement entities are using for recognition and measurement.
Right. So that's the nub of the issue. So unfortunately in Australia, at the moment, it's pretty much what you call a self-assessment process. So just the way we've set up our accounting standards and how it links with the Corporations Act, if you don't have public accountability, then it's effectively a free choice as to what type of financial reporting you actually do. That's because we have something that's called a reporting entity concept. And it's fantastic in theory, because it says if you have general purpose users of your financial statements, then you should prepare a general purpose report. But there's no clear criteria, no objective criteria, that actually, when you come to implement that assessment, means that it can be enforced. Now, you originally had something very similar in your conceptual framework, and then with the last conceptual framework changes, you actually started to take a different tack with reporting entity, and you actually said reporting entity is more the boundary of an entity that's reporting, and your presumption was that if someone was asked to prepare financial statements by legislation, that would in fact be a set of general purpose reports. And quite logically, because you're putting it on public record for people, so there is an expectation you wouldn't be asking for financial statements unless you needed that information. Now, unfortunately, what we have found is that most entities in Australia have actually abused this notion of reporting entity. And so if you think about large proprietary companies, the definition of a large proprietary company was determined by Treasury in Australia. It was meant to be economic significance. And so you'd sort of go, well, surely if you're a director of a large company, you would expect that you'd be saying, I'm economically significant, that's one of the concepts of a reporting entity, I should therefore be preparing general purpose financial statements. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened in Australia, and something like 80% of our large proprietary companies are actually preparing special purpose reports. So the AASB has been aware of this issue. It's been around for at least 20 years. We've had at least three goes to get rid of this concept, and we haven't been successful in the past. This is our latest attempt, because clearly it's not appropriate that you've got so many entities lodging financial statements, and such a large proportion of them are basically picking and choosing what their reporting requirements are. And so there is, in terms of that special purpose framework, the only thing they are asked to do is comply with 5 disclosure standards. One of those is IAS 1, effectively, and 8. So they do have to say what their accounting policies are, but again, effectively, the directors can pick and choose whatever accounting policies they particularly like. ASIC, who is the regulator in Australia, had put out some guidance that said you should be complying with all the recognition and measurement requirements of the accounting standards. We've done some research on that, and about 76% of those entities are actually doing full recognition and measurement, as much as we can tell. So again, that's part of the reason in Australia, and I'll touch on that, why we haven't picked up IFRS sneeze in Australia, because we do believe most entities are already in this space doing recognition and measurement. But the problem is when it comes to disclosures, they're not doing related party disclosures, they're not doing tax disclosures, they're not doing quite a number of important disclosures, and they don't want to, which is clearly not a satisfactory position for us to be in, for ASIC to be in, or for the auditors to be in. And so one of the steps that we did try back in 2010, becoming effective in 2013 on a voluntary basis, was to give people this option of RDR, so reduced disclosure regime. And so again, a little bit of history and context, because I think it's important. We, the AASB at the time, did actually consult on picking up IFRS for SMEs, and the feedback at the time was no, don't do it. And in particular, it was subsidiaries. Because of the subsidiary issue, we had a whole lot of people saying don't, because we want to be able to keep the recognition and measurement requirements of our listed entity. Also because we had the public sector, which had that issue. So they were saying we don't want different recognition and measurement, we want consistency there, but we do want the reduced disclosure piece. And effectively, because we had this understanding, and at that stage we didn't have any evidence, but we understood that most people were actually complying with the ASIC regulatory guidance to do full recognition and measurement. The decision was made at that time, let's not pick up IFRS for SMEs, let's have the reduced disclosure regime, so keep full recognition and measurement, but give some reduction in disclosures. And so our existing RDR is largely, at that time, was based on IFRS for SMEs in any case. So we use the concepts that you have in the basis for conclusions for SMEs to say, here's the things that you should be thinking about when you want to identify the right disclosures. And it was much easier at that stage. And pretty much it was, if you had reduced something in SMEs and we could clearly see that in full IFRS, then we just went tick, we can see that you've made that reduction, we'll start with that. So it was sort of relatively easy at the beginning when we did RDR. But of course, SMEs stayed stagnant. Stagnant's not the right word, stayed static, which was what everybody wanted. And all of a sudden you've got all these new standards coming out, and so we've had this complexity that we've had to go through and say, okay, well, what is the reduction in disclosures for these entities from the new standards? The other piece of information is the way that we did this. So what we actually did was shading in the standard. So effectively we shaded out the things that a Tier 2 or a reduced disclosure entity didn't have to comply with. And what you find is when you do that, which is what I call the top-down approach, it's really hard to go, I'm going to cross that out. And you would have faced this yourself when you actually put the disclosures for those standards together. You put them together because you think that that's an important disclosure. So it's, well, how do I then cross that out? And so that's what we found, is it was actually really complicated. And so then if I sort of put on a scale of how things are working in Australia at the moment, you've got some entities doing full Tier 1 over here. You've got some doing special purpose down here. We've got RDR, which is sort of here, so it's not a big differential. And so what we're trying to do is just bring it back a bit, because what we're trying to do is get these people off special purpose and get to a level playing field, and also just give a little bit more differential between full and Tier 2, the RDR piece. So as I said, it's a very complicated issue in Australia. It's not one that I'm actually proud of, and I'll certainly be very relieved if we can actually get these current proposals over the line, because I think it will fix a terrible situation that we have. So the complexity of a poor person coming to Australia and trying to understand what our requirements are is not simple. So hopefully I have made it at least a little bit understandable where we're coming from.
Okay. Daryl?
So two quick questions then, and I think just perhaps the first one is a marker for later. It sounds like the previous approach that you used for the RDR is essentially the same approach that you're using for your new project, in that you're starting with the IFRS for SME disclosures and then doing something. And it'd be useful as you go through what you're doing now to understand what that contrast is, what it is that you're doing differently now that you think will change relative to the other one.
Yep.
And then I just wanted to check on this overall structure. So as I understand it, then essentially determining whether or not you are a reporting entity is something of a free choice.
Pretty much.
The approach that you're following at the moment is kind of a push-pull thing, where you're trying to say, well, if we make the reduced framework more palatable, easier to apply, et cetera, people will come on their own. Or are you also doing something to kind of push them into the...
What we're doing now is we're saying we're taking away the reporting entity concept, so we're saying there's no choice. So if you're required to lodge financial statements and the legislation says that you need to comply with accounting standards, we're telling you what it is.
And then the last question I wanted to ask you just is the... What we would consider the scope right now of the project as we're considering it is these SMEs that are subsidiaries, obviously.
Yep.
In the Australian framework right now, could an SME that is a subsidiary choose to be a non-reporting entity, comply in full with the R&M requirements, and do whatever disclosures they kind of felt like?
Yep. Okay. Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head.
So in some ways, you're going to be creating the demand because people are able to do it that way now. This push will push them into the right answer. Now you've also got to deliver the solution.
Yep. So if you think about your issue, yours is fairly similar because you've got some people who will be doing full general purpose that may want to come back to whatever you want to call your simplified disclosure. But you may also find that you've got others that haven't been doing that would then take the chance to actually step up and do it. So you do need to keep an eye on both directions. And certainly from our perspective, again, as I said, ours is mostly now trying to get people from the bottom up to the top. But it might interest you just to know in a few stats, because the current regime is voluntary as to whether or not people see any benefit in RDR. And so what we have is, particularly with the large proprietaries, on a voluntary basis, 20% were originally doing general purpose, and 13% of those actually picked up and moved down to RDR. So clearly they saw some benefit in the reduction in disclosures. It's roughly similar outcomes for the other types of pockets that we had evidence for.
Can I confirm 13 of the 20 moved down, or 13% of those who were doing moved down?
Overall, so of the 20%, it then went 13% were doing RDR and 6% were doing doing full general purpose. So the whole idea is to try and get a much simpler outcome, to say either you're publicly accountable, you're doing full Tier 1, if you're still required by legislation to do financial statements in accordance with accounting standards, then you'll do Tier 2 if you're a profit entity, whatever our Tier 2 ends up being. So that RDR's been, as I said, in place since 2013. So we were quite disappointed, not surprised, that really nobody moved off special purpose to RDR.
In the case of a completely voluntary thing, it's volunteering to do more, which does often happen.
We did kind of think that they might go, oh, perhaps this is a better outcome and we don't have to make a free choice. It's been quite interesting that so it is history from what it is. But yes, you just think from a legal perspective, it would obviously be much better to be clear about what your reporting obligations were.
Nick?
Okay. Thank you. You may touch on this later, but that process of crossing out disclosures, which obviously is full of angst, just interested, to what extent have you thought about the users of the financial statements? Are the compositions different, perhaps, from those using full IFRS? Not entirely, but probably, you know, there are more lenders and creditors in there, certainly, than private equity holders, let's say. But how's that coloured your thinking?
Look, in quite a lot of ways. So we did a research paper, and we actually presented this to all these preliminary results to ASAF and to IFAS about the needs of users of consolidated financial statements and whether they actually still needed access to subsidiary information underneath. And I must admit, I was a little bit surprised, but the feedback that we got, and we do now have a user advisory committee comprised of listed users, that committee was very adamant that they needed to have access to subsidiary information if it was available. And perhaps not surprisingly, the credit people that we went and spoke to also said, absolutely, we want that information underneath if it's available. So when we've sort of gone through this project, we've used those people as surrogates, because it's obviously much harder to get access to users of these types of financial information. As we go through, we've still got a bit more tracing of the users to do, just to make sure that they're comfortable with where our proposed level of disclosure is. But what was, again, not surprising to us, but was helpful in making the case that we needed to get some change, was that we could demonstrate that there were users of the information, because they were actually in Australia. To get access to these financial statements, you have to pay. And so we knew how many people were actually paying to get access to this. And there was something like 98,000 hits. Of people actually purchasing financial statements. So we know there are users.
I mean, we've touched upon these issues both in IFRS for SMEs and thinking about the subsidiaries, but also in business combinations under common control in terms of certain transactions. And so I think there the staff have, there's been some helpful information. They're trying to look through this from a different prism. In my experience, users often say they want the information about the subs. How much it's used is actually, I think, a different question, just in what I've observed anyway.
No, again, we did push them quite hard as to what they were doing. They said, yes, but it's not all subs that they would go into, but the key ones, and particularly if there's any debt.
Or there's, from a credit perspective, there may be an issue there, but certainly from an equity perspective. But that difference between equity and credit may colour what disclosures are required. So it kind of feeds through.
And it's also interesting as to who some of the other users were. So in Australia, the tax office has also turned out to be a major user, because they actually use the financial statements to identify those entities that they want to go and get more specific information about if they're concerned about whether or not they've got tax avoidance issues. So you wouldn't normally think of your tax office as being a primary user, but in our case, it actually is evident they're one of the key users. So it has been quite a broad range of people that we've been speaking to. But they do seem to all agree that they can function with, or they get enough information from having that reduced disclosure. They're not seeking the full... I think they do see there's a trade-off, and that it's relatively good.
Okay.
So if we move on to the next one, we've sort of touched on a little bit of this, but, you know, why did we not just pick up fully for SMEs? So I sort of say to everybody, if we were starting from scratch and we had nothing and we didn't have the ASIC regulatory guide, we would have just picked up if it's for SMEs. But we're in a different situation when you've already got people complying with full recognition and measurement. It's then a cost-benefit exercise as to whether or not you move them backwards. And so we did have another look again through this process that we're currently doing. And again, what I'd say to you is, when I looked at the differences between IFRS for SMEs and full GPFS, you'd go, the differences are enough to be a nuisance and not enough to be helpful, to be frank. So So again, I would just put a plea out there is when you're looking at your IFRS for SMEs project, please think carefully about what you're actually trying to do with that underlying project.
What do you mean exactly, Chris?
Well, recognition and measurement, yeah. So I think you need to decide what you want that project to do. Because if it's meant to be a pathway into full IFRS, then you don't want it to be too close to full IFRS. You want to give people the chance of actually being able to make that journey. And so if you just suddenly brought in all of the new standards about revenue and leases and financial instruments into SMEs, I think you will have broken the model. So I would just be very cautious about how much change you actually make. And I was sort of going to talk about this later, but for me, all I can say is please progress with your full recognition and measurement, reduced disclosure, because I think that gives you the chance. And I know you didn't want to talk about three tiers, but from my perspective, I think three tiers would be great, because I think it gives you that option to keep SMEs, the basic SMEs, as a very simple standard, which when you talk to people trying to apply it, that's the benefit. So I think...
Then you don't need to worry too much about IFRS for SMEs to be out of sync with full IFRS.
Yeah. If you got nothing out of today's session, that would be the fabulous takeaway.
But that's something we'll see in our request. Yeah, because our request for information is divided into different sections, and the first section addresses the more strategic issues and the role of that standard. So I think we need to wait till we get the feedback on that. Yeah.
Well, this is important too.
It's our first data point.
Yeah.
But just pursuing a minute longer, Chris, it's not clear to me whether your plea is answered by focusing less on alignment or focusing more on the number of simplifications that you make, even if you push it in the same direction. Because it's important to keep the SMEs aligned, so it is a pathway, but much more simplification in doing that that too creates a lot of space between the two.
Yeah.
It's not the subject of today's debate, but I don't think it's just cut SMEs free is the only way of achieving that.
No, but I think it's recognizing what you're trying to achieve with it and having more of a differential, mm-hmm. I don't think is going to be as problematic as you having it too close. Mm-hmm. Because people won't see the benefits of actually picking it up. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we would like to have in the not-for-profit sector a modified recognition and measurement framework. And so we looked at SMEs, but we've looked at New Zealand's got a Tier 3, and for that sector I'd have to say New Zealand's Tier 3 is far simpler. But I'm not sure it's lost a lot of... things from that, so it's just being conscious that you've got three tiers, you've got a little more leeway.
In the context then of this project, the important thing is you would see this as potentially taking some of those pressures off IFRS for SMEs.
Yep.
And I think that's probably consistent with the last round where a lot of the comment letters we received was from subsidiaries who were SMEs saying, well, we want you to get closer. Mm. And essentially this takes them out of that discussion group, if you like.
Yes. And again, just because the way we've set this proposal up, it is based on the disclosures in SMEs. So again, we're just talking about recognition and measurement, but if you went, we need to put all the disclosures, really, really change the amount of disclosures in the underlying IFRS for SMEs, then again, that's not going to be helpful in terms of us and what we were trying to achieve with our objective. But obviously, you need to think about how it works. So that was slide 5, which is really just, as I said, if we'd had a different starting point, we would have picked up SMEs. So it's nothing to do with we didn't like SMEs. It was just a point of fact of where we were at that time. Okay, so if we go to slide 6, basically what we came down to is we've got a problem. We have to come up with a solution. We did give people the option of staying with RDR and saying, is that the solution if we mandate everything and make that absolutely the case? And really what we heard was no. So people weren't comfortable with where the level of RDR was. Some people are, but the majority of people weren't. So then we said, OK, well, what else do we need to do here? So it was a little bit of a... not quite sure. It was one of those wake up in the morning and go, I dreamed about this type thing and said, OK, let's go back to SMEs and try what I'd call the bottom-up approach. And let's not add disclosures unless we've got a very, very good reason for doing so. And if we just put all of the disclosures in one standard as opposed to doing the shading, is that going to help us not feel like we have to leave stuff in? And I think that the sort of the epiphany was really the leasing standard, because we went, well, if you think about the leasing standard, the new standard effectively is a finance lease, a type of accounting. It's just got some subtleties. But basically it's finance lease accounting. SMEs has actually got finance lease disclosures. So if people are broadly happy with that level of disclosure, then why would we add anything extra? Because we had tried the other approach, and we tried it jointly with New Zealand to see if we could actually get some improvements in RDR, and we'd come up with some concepts, and they're all great concepts, but when you actually came down to how do I actually reduce any of this, you just still kept coming back to, well, somebody likes this. And there's always an argument about why those disclosures should stay rather than what's the argument for actually adding the extra disclosure. So it's a subtle difference, but it... and I think Minor would certainly agree, it does make a difference in how you actually approach it. And again, the fundamental basis on this whole thing working is that we went, well, you don't seem to have had any feedback that the IFRS for SMEs level of disclosure was basically wrong or out of whack. And so if that's the case, then why are we actually trying to continually add stuff to it if that base level of disclosure is actually satisfying what people need? So that's again why I'm sort of making that plea. Don't throw out if it's with me.
Can I ask a question on that, using the leasing as an example, just to make sure? So I agree with you. I think that for this whole sort of idea that you've looked at and what we're looking at to work, we need to be cautious about adding disclosures unless we're really convinced that they're there. And I think you're right that for us, having just written some of these new disclosures, maybe it's harder than it was for you, because maybe we feel a little bit more of an emotional attachment to them. I'm not even going to talk about IFRS 9. just to test, so I agree with you as a general proposition that the SME standard already had the concept of finance leases, and it had a set of disclosures that goes with that. And we ourselves often say that we didn't need a TRG, for example, for IFRS 16, because it was just increasing the scope of people doing finance lease accounting. But we did, in IFRS 16, do some much more specific stuff in some aspects of how you measure those things that are brought on balance sheet. You know, very specific things to do with, you know, what you do with indexing, what you do with options and all of that sort of stuff. So did you sort of think about the differences between the specifics of how the measurement works in the SME regime versus 16 and conclude that there was nothing there that warranted an increase in disclosures, as opposed to just saying it's the same, therefore?
So what we did was I was going to say detail, but it's sort of detail at a high level of looking at what the recognition and measurements requirements were in each of those. So we did go through and make an assessment and say, well, broadly, what were the recognition and measurement things trying to achieve? So in principle, what were you trying to achieve? We probably didn't look in a huge amount of detail at a lot of the specifics. Because, again, if you sort of think about the existing finance leases, it had a lot of stuff about contingencies which weren't being picked up. And so our assessment was, well, unless there's something really fundamentally different about this recognition and measurement and what it's trying to achieve, no, we're not going to add extra disclosures. And we also thought about, well, does that difference or similarity in recognition and measurement actually mean there's a difference in disclosure? Because you might still have a difference in how you're calculating it. And so if you sort of think about nine, we touched on this yesterday, if you think about expected credit loss and incurred loss, at the end of the day, what both are trying to achieve is how much you've impaired it by. And if you've got an accounting policy which tells you what policy is being applied, is the outcome actually really different? What do you want to know? Is I want to know how much you've impaired it by.
Yeah, so I find the leasing argument much easier to accept than the ECL one, and maybe because I'm... But yeah. Just because I spend my whole time saying to investors, you can't understand ECL unless you understand the assumptions. So for me, there's no way I could imagine myself voting for something that didn't have something in the disclosures that was specifically designed to help investors understand the assumptions underlying ECL if that was in the model.
Yeah. And again, we also still have, within these proposals, there's the overarching requirement is that if there's significant estimates and judgments, you still have to explain those. But again, it just sort of means that you don't force every entity into actually making the ECL disclosures, because that's what typically happens with these types of entities. If you put a disclosure in, people don't seem to be able to follow that materiality at that lower level.
And I guess there'd be lots of people who would do a very simplified application of ECL if they were in these sorts of situations.
As well.
So I guess I'd still want to make sure that if somebody was doing something more sophisticated, there was enough information to understand what the heck the numbers mean.
Yeah. And look, you're always going to have differences in degree. So your view and my view about how similar or how different recognition and measurement is could obviously be quite different. But
there was some assessment of thinking about this. It wasn't as though you just said, it's the same, you know, amortised cost measurement, therefore tick. You did think about what the differences were.
Yeah, and there's actually, underneath the exposure draft, there's a massive document where staff actually started with what's in SMEs and then said what are the recognition and measurement differences, and here's how we've actually dealt with those. But it was, again, so we were going into it with the view you've got to have a really strong argument to add something extra.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. Chris, did you, in the process of working on the ED or perhaps even put into the ED, consider at any point the idea of having some kind of additional overarching requirement? And maybe picking up on Sue's comment that you would say, in addition to any of these disclosures, you also require disclosures of any significant judgments that would be different from.
Well, I think that was the comforting factor, that we knew that was already in there.
Okay, so you ride on the existing one without sort of trying to say this is intended specifically to bridge the gap or anything like
that.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think potentially what we might think about is perhaps in the basis for conclusions and perhaps even more in how we go out and start talking about this with people, emphasising the factor that you do need to have that overarching thought process. And I think it does have some interesting implications. And what's also interesting to me is that when we... So we've actually had about three goes since I've been chair trying to move RDR. And when we first started, everybody loved shading and didn't want to move away from it, didn't even want to go to an appendix. This time around, we said to them, OK, here's what it would look like. Here's a separate disclosure standard. And so the vast majority of the feedback has been we love the separate disclosure standard. And so I think it gives you more avenue when you've got it as a separate disclosure standard to actually have those sorts of conversations to say you still have that overarching piece. Everything else is supplemental to that. You've still got to form those overall views. And it might well be something to think about even from a sort of a general purpose tier one approach as to whether or not really there is some benefit in having that separate disclosure standard rather than having disclosures throughout each of the standards. So just finishing off at slide six, we would love it if you progressed your project and we would love to pick it up, but it's just our time frame is we need to get this done. So we have a window of opportunity at the moment as a result of various inquiries in Australia, and if we don't take this opportunity and get something in and locked down very quickly, then we run the risk that we'll never get this project done. So just to give you a sense of where we're at, we would be hopefully finalising this standard at either our March or our April board meeting next year. We have to have it in place ready to go by 30 June. And that's because the large proprietary company thresholds have been increased in Australia. And the basis for conclusions on the increase in the thresholds has made it incredibly difficult for a director in Australia to say they're no longer a reporting entity.
So you have to have something.
So we have to have something, and because they're going to have to make that assessment at 30 June. So we have to have something they can pick up and move on. Is that ideal? No. It would be good if we could see that you were clearly going ahead with the project and piggybacking off you. But from our perspective, hopefully you wouldn't be a million miles away from where we land, and so then we could transition to that at some appropriate point in the future. But also, hopefully what it does, if we move to slide seven, is it gives you the opportunity to do a bit of a road test with us and see what works or doesn't work. And hopefully the feedback that we're going to talk about this morning that we've already had on the current proposals will also just give you a sense of this project is worth doing. So certainly the feedback we've had is not killer, it's terrible, it's just not addressing what people need. That's not the feedback at all. Our feedback is slightly different, though, because of the different context of where we're coming from, and yours will be slightly different. Okay, right, so if we move on to slide eight, this is what we actually did. So as we said, we just started with SMEs. So we basically pulled out every single disclosure. Well, actually, we pulled out everything in SMEs, and then we went through and said, is this disclosure or not? Came clear on where we thought there was disclosure. Worked out that disclosure versus presentation is a bit of a nightmare. So that's certainly one of the issues, I think, for you going forward is thinking about what's that distinction between presentation and disclosure. So we'll touch on a bit more what we actually decided, and that's a little bit open for discussion in terms of how we land on that. But basically started with SMEs. Then we said, okay, what do those disclosures relate to things that are not in full IFRS recognition and measurement? So that took those out. And then we said, where might those disclosures be subtly different that we might need to make some tweaks or changes or change the terminology? So sometimes the terminology in SMEs just doesn't quite work with the terminology in full IFRS. So we did do a few tweaks there to try and make that much more closely aligned. And then lastly, we did have to, and obviously if there's something that's recognition and measurement in full IFRS that's not in SMEs. So, for example, capitalisation of borrowing costs, we had to think about, well, what disclosures might we need about that that should be in there. And interestingly enough, our user on our board was very, very adamant that we had to have disclosures around capitalised borrowing costs, which you wouldn't have thought would have been the case, but it's always surprising. And then lastly, we had to add some extra things in Australia. So one of those things that we did add was audit fees. And so I guess what you would say is this extra disclosure is a principle-based thing, which is there some public interest policy need in it that's Australian-specific that we actually need to add some extra disclosures? So context in Australia, massive audit quality Senate inquiry. Not having audit fee disclosures isn't going down very well. So that's the reason why we've actually added audit fees back in here, which is more than what we currently have in RDR. So that was the basic principle. What we also had was a couple of other things that we had in our minds, but we perhaps haven't made as clear, and we certainly will in our basis for conclusions going forward. What we wanted was for subsidiaries to be able to get exactly the same presentation as their parent, so we didn't want them to have different outcomes as a result of this project, because that would obviously not be satisfying the overarching purpose. And so that was one of the things that was probably the most complicated, which was this distinction between presentation and disclosure. So what we ended up doing was saying, okay, we're just going to use the SMEs presentation and disclosure for things like 1, 7 and 8, because but we need to make sure that the definitions that are used in the full recognition and measurement are exactly the same as in SMEs, so that there's no potential recognition and measurement issues there. So we went that way because we went, well, we're trying to simplify this, and what's in SMEs is actually enough to give you your presentation just outcomes, because the only other option is really to go back and use the full general purpose ones, because it was very hard to try and bring across bits of 1, 7 and 8. Any sort of... one in particular was really hard. Yeah. And so we just went, as a simplification, let's just pick up the SMEs piece. Now, some of the feedback is that people are not that happy with that. They wanted to have the full guidance from 1, 7 and 8 in SMEs, not just... selected bits of it. So that is going to be one of the things that we need to think about carefully as to which way we go. And so we'll be watching your project with interest to see if there's anything that comes out before we have to make our decision. What we didn't want...
Did you have a...
Chris?
Yep.
Yeah, if I... Just on that point, this is an area in which... Your project kind of has a special question for those that are currently the scope boundaries of ours, which is subsidiaries that are SMEs.
Yep.
And you phrased it as you want them to be able to get the same presentation as would be necessary for inclusion in their in the consolidated financial statements of their parent. But do you feel, when you think about the needs of that subset of the population, that subset of your population, is your focus on permitting them to or requiring them to? Because I could see, thinking about whether you are imposing things that would preclude them from doing the same thing as they would for their parent. But I'm not sure that when you think about your broader population, you'd have to require everybody to do it in order to keep the subsidiaries group aligned.
So we tried to stay with the basic principle, which was stick with IFRS for SMEs. So, and probably the best example was the statement of changes in equity, where there's an option to present it a different way. So again, we've had some feedback. Some people hate the option and say, just get rid of it. So if you were going to do that, then you'd choose the option that was going to give you the outcome that subsidiaries would be the same as the parent. But if you stick with what we've currently done, which is leave the option, the subsidiaries have the choice of choosing the one that's similar to the parent. So we were going down the route of permitting, not specifying. So there was a couple of others that we had to think about. So
discontinued operations. That was the trickiest one, because you kind of got the measurement from IFRS 5, but then in IS 1, in IFRS for SMEs, you've got different presentation requirements where you don't have to present it separately on the face of the balance sheet, your discontinued operation. However, the way we've been reading and the requirements is that you still would have to reclassify it as current if you hold something for sale. And so it's then you don't have to present it separately, but if you wish to present it separately, you could. So nothing in the standard would prevent you from doing that, and that comes back to Chris's comment and saying we want to make sure that they can, if they wish to, present it the same way as under full IFRS, but also alternatively, if they're not a subsidiary, for example, they can use the simplified method and don't have to present it separately. So that gives sort of the two options. And those were, I think, the two main presentation issues that we had.
There's probably a couple of other subtle ones where we just went... And again, you could have come up with a principle which is everyone, regardless of what tier they're on, should have the same financial statements, so same balance sheet P&L and statement of cash flows. And we had toyed with that with the previous attempt to change to RDR. So again, that was an option that was available to say that was the principle and that's how we'd work out what the disclosures were. But at the end, we went, there doesn't seem to be enough difference between what IFRS for SMEs is asking for in any case that you actually really needed to do that. But that will be our last check to make sure that there's nothing there, because we do think that the key is to make sure that subsidiaries at least can get the disclosure they need for financial statements. And again, we have heard comparability is really important for users, so that's regardless of who we've spoken to, that's been their key thing, is they want to know when they pick up a set of financial statements that it is consistent with how someone else's, another entity's has done it. And so we've sort of have touched on with our user advisory committee is, you know, what would you think about this statement of changes in equity, and they're not really fussed on that. So that they're not seeing that as a major difference that would be a problem for them in terms of looking at various types of entities. The other thing so I probably should have made this clear. So the idea was it is a separate disclosure standard. And so what that means is when you put those disclosures into a separate disclosure standard, you have to turn off all the disclosures in the actual standards themselves so people know what is working there. Now, most standards, that's actually fairly straightforward because things are under a heading called disclosures and you can kind of go, okay, don't need to worry about that, I just go to my separate standard. It is a bit of an issue with some of the presentation things. So, again, this is, again, something to think about when you're doing your project. You don't want people having to struggle to find out what they do and don't have to comply with. So if you're going to write new standards, can you please put it under a heading presentation? But can you clean up the old ones as quick as possible? So if we were uncertain, I think probably our general principle was to put it into SMEs and just have it in one place so that they weren't sort of having to look at disclosure and bits of presentation here and stuff back in the body of the standard. So and that's just, I think, an issue as we go through.
Particular IS1 is classic because it goes all over and it would be too difficult, it would be too hard for users, so it was much easier to just say, okay, don't look at IS1, look at our standard, so to make that easy, because otherwise you would have had to sort of really specify individual paragraphs.
Mary?
Chris, are you going to... Sorry, I'm just trying to get an image of the document that you're going to publish. Is it going to be just... saying apply IFRS recognition and measurement, but here are the disclosures and only publish the disclosures? Or are you going to publish a standard that is all of the recognition modified to delete the presentation, all the recognition and measurement modified to delete the presentation, but with the disclosures as revised?
So we have an application standard, which basically says if you're required to comply with accounting standards, you come through the application standard, and it says if you've got public accountability, then you'll do full general purpose financial statements. Yeah. You comply with everything else.
Yeah.
What it now says is if you don't have that, then and you're doing general purpose, you comply with RDR. So that will switch and that will change and say what that means is you comply with all the recognition and measurement requirements of the individual standards, so we don't change those, and you comply with this
disclosure standard.
Okay, so you just published the disclosures for this document.
Yep.
And so it, to some extent, you'll be relying on people's judgment. You know, and as you said, they were, are going to have to go through and decide whether something is a presentation requirement or a disclosure requirement. Because it, you know, that you
so we tell them. So we tell them which.
So you tell them for presentation as well.
Each standard will have an appendix, which will have say which paragraphs are turned off. So when I go to IFRS 5, for example, it will say these paragraphs are not applicable if you are reporting under this standard.
Okay.
And other standards like impairment or something.
So
like
when
that.
You publish IFRS 5 as AA. SB 105. You would say, here it is. If you're applying the full standards, you know, publicly accountable or voluntarily, go on and read the rest of this. If you're applying our revised reduced disclosure regime, turn off these paragraphs and instead do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that... So our preparers are used to that because that's technically what happens with the shading as well. It's just that the shading also gives them the visual piece.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, yeah, quite complicated because nobody can remember whether shading means you do or don't. So. Which is a bit of a problem, really.
Never heard of shady accounting standards.
Article this morning that said they're too complicated, huh? So I don't know whether that means they're shady or not. Okay, so if we move on, so just slide 9. So just finishing off slide 8, I think what we'll end up is we'll probably have a couple of extra principles that we'll add as a result of the feedback. So one will be around that public interest policy piece, and there'll be probably another one which talks about nothing being higher than full general purpose, and we'll make it explicit that if you're a subsidiary, you have to be able to get the same presentation outcomes as your parent. So I think that'll just make it a bit tighter in terms of what our principles are. So slide 9 is what we did in terms of recognition and measurement differences. So as we said, we went and we did the exercise and said, let's have a think about what the differences are from a recognition and measurement point of view and think about what that might impact in terms of the actual financial statements. So where things were being recognised or not recognised from that perspective. So again, and then the question was, is there anything at all in SMEs that looks and feels like it's the same thing? So, again, with something like revenue, we went, the outcomes of the new revenue standard are very similar to the outcomes of what was in IFRS for SMEs. So either you recognise revenue over time or at a point in time. So does it really matter about your methodology of how you got there? Our assessment was no. And in actual fact, if you think about underlying IFRS for SMEs, it's actually using a performance obligation approach. So it actually seemed very consistent with what was actually being looked at in terms of the new standard. And as we said, bottom up, so that was the important point. Start with what's there and then say, okay, really have to justify adding something extra. And what we've also heard is that the simpler language in IFRS for SMEs is also much more appreciated by our users and by our preparers. So they found it much easier to understand what we're actually asking for in terms of the disclosures. So that's also something else to think about. Better disclosures, because they actually understand what they're meant to be doing.
That does sound logical, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does a bit, but anyway. So if we move to slide 10, these were the biggest ones that we had to think about, obviously, because they were the new standards. So for 15, as I said, we really didn't make huge changes. We did change the terminology to make sure it was actually consistent. So if you're looking at your recognition and measurement, you at least had the tie through to the disclosures. Leases, again, we said very much the lease liabilities is the same as you would get for finance leases, so pretty much stuck with that. Did add in some extra things for the low value and short-term leases by making the operating lease piece work for that. So again, Sue, that was thinking about what those differences were. And I guess what you'd say is we did have a very high hurdle. So again, where you choose to draw that line as to the distinction between recognition and measurement is obviously a judgment call. But for us, we just went, no, it needs to be really, really significantly different before we want to add some extra disclosures in. Remembering, again, our objective could be a little bit different to yours because we're looking at bringing on people who haven't been doing anything. So from our perspective, level playing field is the most important thing. And you can always move people up once you've got them to that level playing field. Okay, so did anyone have any specific questions on what we did with revenue leases and financial leases?
Yeah. Can I ask a question in connection with how you managed to update the revenue accounting standards disclosure? I mean, it's about slide 10.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, you mentioned that you try to keep the disclosure requirement that already required within IFRS for SME. So that means that you only change the terminology, like within the SME, paragraph 23, 31 through 32, it's disclosure requirement in connection with the revenue from construction contract. In that case, you replace the construction contract with the revenue recognized over time.
Yep. Yes, yeah, effectively. Okay. Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, because we essentially said that that was the time recognition.
Right,
So let's follow those disclosures, whereas the other one was more the point in time.
So keep the disclosure requirement asking the entity to provide the information in connection with the amount of the revenue recognized in the period, as well as the method how they recognize the revenue. So that kind of thing is still...
Yeah. Yeah, so we probably had what you call a broad brush and said, look, if it looks and feels like it's the same outcome, then if you've already got those disclosures there, then let's use that. And there was a number of places where we actually did that, where you'd go, oh, look, this just seems like the same accounting thing. And I'm going to talk about insurance contracts, because that's, again, been some of the feedback that we hadn't actually really thought about insurance contracts. We were more thinking about insurers. And so if you think about insurance contracts, you go, well, what are they most like? Oh, actually, financial instruments, provisions, there's probably enough in there between those two to actually get a long way towards what you might think the insurance disclosure should be. And so that was pretty much the principle on which we looked at this. Martin? Oh, Mary, sorry.
Okay. Chris, I'm going to ask you for an opinion, but on something that it's maybe radical in terms of Michelle warning it in terms of our project. Because as I listened to you explaining both your approach, you know, which is aligned with ours in terms of starting with the SME standard in the areas in which you had particular challenges, makes me wonder whether we should be holding off trying to do something on our project. I know why you had to go ahead in terms of your timing. Until we get two things done, or at least close to finish, which is how we are updating the SME standard, because you know we're at the early consultation stage for potentially significant changes to the SME standard, and to go through and do something based on the existing version when we're about to go through a major update kind of says, should you wait until you at least have more visibility about what we're doing? And the other is potentially the IS-1, because you know we're getting ready to issue an exposure draft of changes that would make significant changes and actually replace IS1. So it just makes me say, should we not, you know, should we not try to forge ahead with this one until we have greater certainty about those other things, if they are the starting places for, you know, disclosure? I know your situation is different.
Interesting enough, we had this conversation yesterday, and so I think if I was in your shoes, I would actually be aligning the two projects. Unless you've got...
By aligning, you mean waiting for the SME update?
The underlying interest for SMEs. Unless...
Aligning, I had almost doing them at the same time, but is that what you're saying or not?
Yes.
Hold this until we had more certainty about the SME standard.
No, it seems different.
Unless your feedback is you need to progress quickly, or your timeline for underlying adoption of update of SMEs is really long. Because it might be that you've already got some feedback that says, look, for these subsidiaries, we need something that's in place quite quickly.
The way you faced an urgent demand, but otherwise you'd say from an efficiency perspective, it would be better to have at least a high degree of certainty about where we're going with SMEs in particular.
Yeah, and I guess, again, it depends on how you... how you articulate what your project is, whether it's actually the bottom-up approach that we've been doing or whether it's a slight variation on that. So, you know, you might be able to do it in a different way.
Martin.
Francois.
One question. I understand that recognition and measurement, specific disclosures, your starting point is ME standard and not looking specifically what is the difference in full IFRS. Man, don't you see that if you're doing that, from preparers who have to apply full IFRS, that they would question you and saying, okay, if you are happy for other companies, okay, to have the same recognition and measurement, but this disclosure is specific for our users to understand that, why on the one hand side you think you don't need the disclosure, but for others you need the disclosure. And I think it is very difficult then to defend. Because we have overall, this kind of from preparer saying we have disclosure overload, it's too much and too many. And if you're starting now to say, okay, for some entities, okay, it is okay if you don't have that disclosure, which especially should explain the measurement and recognition, and for others you're needing that. For me, it would be difficult to defend that and to argue why, on one hand side, you need it, because you cannot... I think argue with different users. I think would be difficult for this specific measurement, which is to understand recognition and measurement.
So I think you either fundamentally buy into the principle that you can have two tiers or you don't. And I think there is an argument to say, yes, there are users, but the are they the same users and are they looking for the same sort of information? It does seem to be that they do accept that they can get by with that smaller set because of the types of entities that are actually applying it. So remembering we're not talking about your full listed who actually are out there with the public really broad, broad users that actually need that information. What you're talking about with most of these types of entities, certainly from our perspective, is that there is a closed group of users. Whilst they're on public record, the reason why those people are looking for that information is slightly different to your primary investors. Because if you think about your primary investors in a lot of these proprietary companies, it's a very small, tight-knit group. And you've got...
So there is sufficient difference in user base to legitimise a difference from...
Yes. Yeah. So that's certainly how, in my mind, I have got to the point that I can live with having two tiers for these types of entities.
Françoise, I did want to get in. Françoise?
Yes. Am I on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now, I wanted to react to whether... we should wait for this project and the outcome of the review of the SMEs, because as Daryl mentioned earlier, this project removed the pressure that some exercise on the IFRS for SMEs to bring it closer or as close as possible to the recognition measurement requirements of full IFRS. So I think it's very important that we show to the subsidiaries of listed groups that we are heading with something that solves the issue, so you don't need to exercise that pressure on the IFRS facility itself. So that's one point. I wanted also to react to differences in information depending on users. Of course, there is the difference in interest, whether you have debt or equity. I would like to mention also that, in fact, the basis for contribution to the IFRS facility is that understanding the amount that is recognized as part of the requirements that are necessary. And also that what we have to take into account is not only those aspects of the disclosures, but also how those users use that information. And we had identified at the time of the IFRS facility when it was developed that most users of this type of financial statements have a way of addressing the information which is pretty much standardized. And that also brings limitations to the amount of information that they can really use. In other words, there's some information would remain useful to them in theory, but not in practice.
Okay. Anne?
I'd also like to comment on the timing of the project. So I think it's been very helpful with Chris talking about her project and talking about the surrounding issues. I wouldn't like us to hold the subsidiaries project pending the review of the IFRS for SMEs, but I think that the IFRS for SMEs will give us really useful information that will help us. So I would still see them as concurrent at the moment, but then I think the RFI will generate a lot of information which will help us decide. Because Chris has challenged us to think about whether there are actually three tiers here, and she has pointed out the issues around having an IFRS for SMEs that is so close to full IFRS. That's one of the things you've said, Chris, where you've had to think about making a distinction. And so that really challenges us as we look at these very large standards, trying to work out how much of those large standards goes into IFRS for SMEs, or as Mary says, to what complexity, what level of simplification is in there. And I think our RFI is heading in the right direction to get us that information to make decisions.
Okay,
just conscious of time. So very quickly, future changes, which is slide 11, obviously, if you go this route, then you do need to keep updating as you go. And so certainly from our perspective, it'd be nice if you were doing this project and we didn't have to go in forward, so we could just pick up yours. But it would mean that you, as you put out something new, you would have to think about what are the subsidiary disclosures that you want at that point, which is not a bad outcome. Okay, so is everyone happy with what we actually did? So we might now move on to, what have we actually heard? So if we move to slide 12, so we've done some outreach, and we've also, in addition to that, now we've closed our comment period. So we actually have 21 submissions that we've had came in after this. So what we have here is our roundtables and our webinars. So we had quite a broad range of people responding to us, which was quite good. Probably not as many as I would have liked, but then the context is this is our second round of consultation as well. So I think a lot of people basically went, you're heading in the right direction, we're not going to respond this time. So nothing extra from our perspective. So if we move on to slide 13, so what have we heard? So very, very much continue on with the project. So we certainly haven't had any real feedback that said, no, this project's not worth progressing. So I think from your perspective, that should also give you comfort that people do think it is a worthwhile approach to at least be considering. What we also heard, which was, again, quite surprising, was that a very, very high percentage of people actually did like the fact it was in a separate disclosure standard.
which, given the context of where we come from, I was really surprised about, that it was such a high percentage of people agreeing with that. In terms of the written submissions, we did have 4 out of the 21 saying they didn't like that. But again, I guess as you think about it, the people who don't like it are the ones that write in, and you don't always get to hear from the ones that do. And certainly the webinar and the outreach and just the general conversations with people is that people do like that separate standard approach. So in terms of specific things that came back, so slide 14, statement of changes in equity, we sort of touched on before. We did get some quite mixed feedback about that. So we're going to have to make a decision about that. I think given it is mixed feedback, I think it's probably unlikely that we would take away that option. And I think in the end it's fairly restricted as to who actually gets to use that option. So unless there's some extra users when we do a little bit more targeted outreach with them that actually say no, then I think we'll probably stick with what the proposal was, which was leave it, basically. Any questions on that one?
Quick.
Yep, sorry.
Quick one.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, could you tell the response of these or the 50, for example, 53% from round table on the statement of change in equity? Could you differentiate this from the subsidiaries or non-subsidiaries response?
No, we don't have. Unfortunately, we don't have.
Don't have. Sorry.
No, we know who was preparer, but at the round tables we didn't, because it was voting by hand, show of hand, and we didn't necessarily write down at that time who was who that was voting. So. At the webinar, we've got a good breakdown of where the voting was coming from, but we didn't ask anyone to identify themselves as subsidiary versus other.
How many comments you have received today? By today, you said there are how many 21. Comments letters?
21. You so one of those 21. Was specifically in connection right. as a subsidiary.
Yes.
So their view was, it was quite interesting. So their view was we should have less disclosure. Because we don't have any users. And I was like, well, actually, that's not our feedback, so that there are users. And we can't see any reason to justify reducing further than IFRS for SMEs, those disclosures. So so we're unlikely to respond to that. Certainly we didn't hear anything. My recollection of the roundtables was that there was, and those people who were subsidiaries or had subsidiaries, they weren't particularly interested in this issue because they wouldn't be using it. So there's no sense in them doing a different disclosure. Okay, so tax reconciliation, which is the next slide. This was quite interesting because so SMEs doesn't actually have a mandatory tax reconciliation. It asks you to talk about the key components. And so, again, we've had mixed feedback on this one. So quite a lot of people said, well, you've got to do the reconciliation anyway, so why wouldn't you just get people to do it? We've also heard from users in the past that they like reconciliations. It makes them feel like they really understand what the issues are. And I think the thing that will sway it for us is actually our ATO, the tax office, is going to write us a letter and say, we want this information. Just the narrative disclosure isn't enough because it's not giving us any quantitative numbers. So I think this will be one where we'll say the principle will be it's a public interest policy override of the SMEs requirement. But that might also be some feedback that you might like to take into account thinking about the underlying SMEs itself.
Mary? Chris, this issue highlighted a general question for me about what you considered in terms of costs. So, you know, so if one of the purposes of an SME standard or SME-based disclosures is to significantly reduce the cost of preparing financial statements, do you consider only costs of preparing and potentially of having audited, whether it's systems or people or time, you know, to collect data, or do you also consider the argument that's in the top right-hand box on 15, which is it puts me at a competitive disadvantage, you know, I'm characterizing that as competitive disadvantage, commercial sensitivity, category. I mean, are you, so which are you focused on the narrower definition of cost or the broader definition of cost?
Probably the narrower definition.
Out-of-pocket cost.
Mostly that sort of, or the difficulties of actually getting that information. So there's always that way up between.
But I think of difficulties as an out-of-pocket cost because it's hard. It might be internal out-of-pocket, but it's still direct cost.
Yeah, and I think what we heard is auditors basically require this anyway to then do the narrative. So from that perspective, it didn't really seem like it was going to be.
Right. And I'm less focused on this one. It just brought up the general point of what are the valid categories of cost in your mind?
Yeah. We have had not really that much feedback in terms of concerns about disclosing sensitive information.
So it hasn't been a big deal in your consultation. Okay.
KMP is the biggest. We heard a couple of people that said we don't want to provide any KMP key management personnel disclosures, or preferably no real out-of-pocket disclosures. But I think that's
not
it. Tadeo, it's interesting the sentence here. If tax reconciliation was not being publicly available. Might be a question of competitiveness, but isn't that also that they don't want to open these for the tax authorities?
Yeah, which is, of course, part of the reason why we think they probably should. So.
And, I mean, the tax authorities, you could argue, can actually request that information anyway, but they've told us that they prefer it in the financial statements because then it's audited. Because otherwise they might get a tax reconciliation from the company, but they don't know how reliable it is.
Because in the end of the day, this is the wrong reason for, I mean, that one, the biggest argument behind this project is just to have less cost in preparing the financial statement and not less transparency. That if the information is important, it should be disclosed.
Yeah.
If we believe that just a narrative description is enough, that's okay. But we shouldn't. It's dangerous. This type of it's the people are saying that what is in the base for conclusion.
Yeah.
That's.
And I think our thing would be difficult to say, particularly for this. How it would be too overly sensitive. So, So this will be an interesting one, I think, when we read about it.
This with some of the complaints that I have been heard about the 23, the uncertainties on
income tax. Yes, people do have quite a lot of sensitivities. Okay. Right, moving on. This is probably, so if we move on to slide 16, this is probably the one that's most challenging to us, to be honest. So at the moment in SMEs, there's a difference between, you have to do a maturity analysis for lease liabilities, but you don't have to do it for other financial liabilities. And so it's kind of hard to rationalise why there's a difference. And that's the feedback we've had from people is be consistent. So it's either all in or all out. And I think we're probably going to have to take that on board. So again, that would be something to think about in your underlying IFRS for SMEs. Is there a real reason why there's a difference in terms of maturity analysis? And particularly when you come back to overarching user needs. Slide 17. Also, we did get some feedback. There are some disclosures that we've identified that now are greater than what's in full IFRS, although we understand that they weren't at the time that IFRS for SMEs got written. So, again, people have said to us, you need to have an overarching principle that says you can't go above full IFRS. So that certainly makes sense to us, and I think that's where we'll land with that one. But it does sort of raise one of the issues that you need to think about in terms of ongoing maintenance. Slide 18 was just, we've touched on this a little bit, the discontinued operations and the presentation issues, so I don't think we'll go back into that any further. Slide 19, User Advisory Committee. Basically, again, as we mentioned, the reason we went to them was because we had the feedback that they do look into these subsidiaries' reports, so we just want their feedback. Broadly, they're happy with where the direction of this projects going, so they didn't really come out with anything that said, no, you're heading in the wrong direction. As I mentioned, we are still going to do a bit more targeted outreach to see if we can get any more feedback from users on that basis. Slide 20, just moving off. So in terms of, written submissions, again, we had 7 out of 21 that said don't like it. A large chunk of those was actually saying stick with RDR, because I don't think they quite understood that that was originally based on IFRS for SMEs. It's just that obviously it's got quite difficult in terms of keeping up with what's happening. We haven't really seen anything in those submissions that again would indicate we're not really heading in the right direction with this project. So I think from our perspective it's really just those couple of key ones that we just quickly touched on where we will have to make some decisions as to whether we stay with the original proposals or whether we do actually make a few tweaks. But broadly, we've been really happy with people's responses to this, and hopefully you get the sense that, yes, this is a project that is likely, I think, to get good feedback from subsidiaries. Again, if you think we've pretty much been doing something similar with RDR for quite a number of years, it is certainly, well, there are benefits to it, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't have had anybody voluntarily moving to it from full tier one. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of comfort on that space. Okay, so what's up for us? We basically just need to decide what we're going to do with those last few tweaks, and I understand you're having a board meeting in January, so that's a great timing for us, so we'll get to see the outcomes of your conversations at that point. But for us, we absolutely have to get on and get this finished. So intention is to take to the March board meeting full collation of results of everything we've got, plus very specific recommendations. If we're lucky, we may get it through at March. Otherwise, it will certainly be April that we have to push on and finalise our project.
Well, thank you, Chris and Maina, for sharing your experiences from the manifold questions. You can deduce that you found it very interesting and helpful. And let's hope that in the future of this, our projects, we can continue helping each other.
That would be lovely. So, can
thank you so much.
Progress, please.
Take a 5-minute break.